Ave Maria Radio and Renewal Ministries presents Fire on the Earth, a compelling look at the new evangelization through inspiring teachings, interviews, and testimonies.
Welcome, friends. We're here again today with our special guest this week, Sean Breeden. And Sean's not only a great friend of Ave Maria Radio, he's the sales manager of Ave Maria Radio, but he's also a tremendous teacher and a man who's on a spiritual journey and has been for a long time. And the Lord's really given him lots of treasure. And he began to break open a subject that he's been teaching on, and he's kind of in demand. Like, more people want to hear it, and because I think there's some real grace that's working through him. And yesterday, if you didn't have a chance to tune into the program, he began by talking about Joan of Arc and Thérèse of Lisieux and the graces that came through them, and we'll continue to talk about that. So I want to welcome you to the program today. If you didn't have a chance to tune into the program Monday or Tuesday, you can go to Renewal Ministries website or just go to Ave Maria Radio or download the app. You can listen to the program you missed. I think you're going to be very, very blessed by it. But Sean, welcome back.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. So let's keep going. This has been good. I really enjoy this.
Yeah, so one thing just helpful to frame us is, okay, why... We talked about last time how when Thérèse was between the ages of 10 and 13, she was obsessed with Joan of Arc. That's how I would describe it. She was very into the biography of Joan of Arc, and she had this profound experience of reading Joan's biography and coming to the revelation that she was called to great things and ultimately called to be a saint. You have to remember also that Lisieux itself, where Thérèse was after her mother died, they moved from Alençon to Lisieux. Lisieux was only 60 miles from Rouen, where Joan of Arc was burned at the stake. So already, there's proximity there. Also, Joan of Arc is a national hero, right, of France, and Thérèse is French. So there's already a background of sort of knowing about Joan of Arc. So it's not surprising that she would look up to Joan of Arc, both being French and being Catholic. It sort of merged those two things together. However, what I want you to realize is that when she was reading these things about Joan of Arc.
Can you remind us how old she was when she was doing that?
Yeah, Thérèse.
Yeah.
So Thérèse was between the ages of 10 and 13.
Okay.
That's the section of Story of a Soul where she describes it is during those years. So I want you to imagine, as we sort of press into what happens when Joan of Arc is between the ages of 13 and 16 and beyond, I want you to picture listening to this story as Thérèse of Lisieux, who's experienced the death of her mother, and her older sister, Pauline, going to the convent shortly thereafter the next year. Her other older sister, Marie, goes to the convent as well. And she's dealing with this kind of a psychological battle, a feeling of abandonment with the death of her mother. And this is where she is when she's reading this, okay? Now, with Joan of Arc, what happens is from age 13 to 16, it's kind of business as usual. St. Michael says, be a good girl and go to church often. And as I said before, she said, great. It's like, This is just living the Catholic life. Sounds good. But at age 16, things begin to shift. And I believe there's probably some, over time, St. Michael probably gradually revealed things, but the fullness of what he was asking her to do was revealed at age 16. So he goes from be a good girl and go to church to, I would like you to go to Sir Robert de Baudricourt, invoke a lure, tell him you are sent by the King of Heaven, and only you can lift the siege of the city of Orléans and have Charles VII crowned King of France. Do you have any questions?
Oh, wow.
Her first response, which, and again, with Joan, everything is recorded. We have thousands of pages of the condemnation trial, as well as the church later will review that trial and send people to inquire at her hometown and all the soldiers that she knew. And we have all of the interviews, like Joan of Arc's childhood friends doing interviews. It's just fascinating. So, you know, they go back and some of these interviews are pretty fascinating. But Joan's first response to this this request is, but I don't know how to ride a horse. Like, I mean, she probably knew how to ride like a horse on the farm. Yeah. But what she's saying in the French, from what I understand, is I don't know how to ride a war horse. She says, I do not know how to ride or lead in war. I have no war skills. On top of that, she's illiterate, and she's 16, and she's female, and she's a peasant. So you have to be nobility to be a knight, right? You have to be male. And none of this is going to happen for a female in the 1400s. It's just not on the radar. So Robert de Baudricourt says to her uncle, who had taken her, he says, take her home and have her beaten.
Wow. Wow.
For us, probably that might be the end of our divine mission.
I'm done.
Like ego is severely bruised, insulted by a noble.
Yeah.
But like Joan wasn't deterred at all. She's just waiting for the next moment to go again. What's interesting is she has 9 months that go by where nothing happens on her mission. Still having faith in nothing but God's promise that she was this person sent to save France. And during this time, her town is raided by Burgundian soldiers. They were kind of on a frontier on this civil war. So they're surrounded by the English-aligned Frenchmen. And on top of that, her parents say, okay, we now understand that she's apparently hearing voices and telling nobility about it. I think the solution is we should get her married. So they say, we want you to marry this young man. And she says no, because she had promised St. Michael the Archangel to remain a virgin until such a time as it may please God, is what it says. And so for the first time, she's taken by her parents and the suitor, taken to an ecclesiastical court in front of a bishop in Toul, France, at the cathedral. There's a plaque outside of that cathedral today that says, this is where Joan of Arc defended herself on a breach of a promise of marriage. And the judge, the bishop, found that she had made no such promise. So this was the first time Joan of Arc defended herself in an ecclesiastical trial. Then she ends up going back. She sort of gains popular support. There's some evidence to suggest that perhaps some other members of nobility were like, hey, we're losing really terribly. Like, let's just give it a shot. Maybe she's from God. Some of these sort of machinations going on.
Was that desperate?
Yes.
To give this young girl a shot at it.
There's literally quotes from people of the time saying there was no hope but in God. This is how they worded it. Luckily, God was right around the corner in a young maiden. So she ends up going to Chinon to see the king. An 11-day journey, 320 miles with 6 escorts that are with her through enemy territory. And the faith of Joan of Arc, she's so childlike in the midst of going to lead a battle. But she's going on the way to meet the king. Her only thought was, when can we go to Mass? Because all of her childhood friends says she was always going to Mass, always going to confession, just person after person after person. Talking about her devotion to Our Lady and all of these things. Very, very pious young woman. Very real faith that she had. So she gets there. The king at first, different sources trying to make a bigger deal out of it than probably happened. The eyewitnesses say that the king said, you know, she goes up to the king and says, you're him. He calls him Gentle Dauphin, which is the term of the crown prince. And he says, no, I'm not. It's that guy over there. And she says, no, it's you. And you're going to become king, and I'm going to lift the siege of Orléans. She ends up convincing him by later meeting with him privately and telling him the contents of his prayer to God that morning what he says. So listen to this. Listen to Joan watching this. And then when Thérèse, watching, sort of seeing this scene, reading about this scene, now compare her life. When she was 13, she has what she calls the grace of her complete conversion. And how my life would have been different if I had a complete conversion at the age of 13. Oh. But she says, you know, she was hypersensitive. She gets home from midnight Mass, and usually she gets little goodies in her shoes after midnight Mass. She overhears her father say, gosh, I hope this is the last year we're doing this. Isn't she getting a little old for this? And then her sister, Celine, says, oh my gosh, she's like, essentially, she's going to ruin Christmas for everyone. She's about to bawl. But she said in that moment, God gave her this grace to not cry, to walk downstairs as if she heard nothing, and happily opened the gifts that were in her shoes. And she's what Thérèse, and in this is where the childlike and the warrior merge. Thérèse says, from that day, I was never defeated in battle again. I was never defeated in combat.
Yeah.
You know, she has this self-identification as a warrior.
So how, just to, for our listeners who may not have caught it, what was the combat in the moment for her?
In the moment, it was really the hypersensitivity.
Got it. Okay.
Of saying, you feel this intense emotion and your tendency is to turn inward on yourself and talk, oh my gosh, he hurt me. My father, who I love so much, he said this hurtful thing to me. And this was very much part and parcel of these wounds that she experienced after the death of her mother. And she said in that moment, she said the tears dried up And she sort of, she said she recovered the courage and the strength that she had before the death of her mother, is what she said. Now, the next part gets even more fascinating, that she says she believes she has a vocation to enter Carmel, to become a Carmelite cloistered nun. She had an inclination of this even from a very early, she even says at the age of 2, which I don't remember anything from when I was 2, but she says she had reason very quickly. Even when she was 2, she was like, I think I want to be a nun. But as far as a mature, discerned choice, it was when she was 13 after this. And she gets her father's permission to enter Carmel. She gets the Carmel's permission, the Carmelite monastery there. But there is a priest by the name of Canon de la Truette, who is sort of the liaison between the bishop and the Carmelite order in the area. And he says, no. Like, wait till you're 21. This is ridiculous. You're 14. You know, let's wait a little bit. And she says, can I go to the bishop and ask him? And he says, sure, do whatever you want. So she, you've seen the picture probably when she's 15 and her hair is kind of up in a bun. She says that she put her hair up to look older as she and her father met with the nun, and the father meets and the bishop is like, wait, you have other daughters? Like, oh yeah, my oldest daughter, Pauline, and my other daughter and my, you know, my niece. Yeah, they're all nuns and she wants to be a nun. And I think she has a vocation. The bishop says, I'll think about it. In the meantime, they had already planned a pilgrimage to Paris and to Rome. So in Therese's little mind, she's like, I'm going to see the Pope. Oh, my. Yeah. Now, can't you picture
Chutzpah.
Can't you picture her thinking of Joan going from Sir Robert de Baudricourt through all these channels, all the way up to the king? And now here's Therese going from her father and her uncle to the Mother Superior, to Canon de la Truette, to the bishop, and now she wants to go see the Pope. Yeah. And you see that she sort of got some of that courage from the testimony of Joan saying, I want the will of God, whatever it takes. I'll go to whatever length I have to do the will of God. And I think we can confuse that sometimes with pride. But when you're saying, all I want is the will of God, and there's this holy urgency that you have, it would be a sin to go against it. She was trying to go all in for the will of God.
Yeah, what a beautiful story. This has been really good. Just the journey of these two young girls, really, and then young women, and also just the mystery of God's choices, who God chooses for particular big things that have to be done too. Just think about Our Lady. When he chose Our Lady and in her humility and her simplicity, her purity, and wow, she's at the center of it all. But in the world, where's the strength? Where's all the connections? Where's all the power? Where's all the influence? God is drawn to the humble and the meek and the childlike who trust him. It's so wonderful. Well, we're not even close to being done with the story, are we? We got a couple more days.
We
can do
it.
Great. Oh, I hope, so glad you can come back. Friends, hope you're being built up. These are wonderful stories to meditate on of real people who love the Lord and are living from the grace of what we're celebrating in this season of Easter, what Jesus has won for each and every one of us to give us power to become children of God and to walk our own journey with him. Hope you can join us tomorrow. God bless you.
Each program of Fire on the Earth with Peter Herbeck can be downloaded at AveMariaRadio.net and RenewalMinistries.net. Fire on the Earth is a production of Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'd like to offer you my new booklet, Does God Judge? Wow, what a question, but it's a relevant question. Scripture says we were all appointed to die once and then the judgment. We know for sure each one of us has an appointment in our future. And it takes Scripture, Catechism, and the saints to help us understand the beauty of God's plan and how we can look forward to the judgment as followers of Christ. If you'd like to get a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789 or visit renewalministries.net/FOE.